Hello and welcome to The Late Debate with me, Audrey Carville. Coming up, the government versus the PAC.
The real intention of the government is to close down public scrutiny and frustrate oversight and accountability.
And the costs of Irish water.
Taoiseach, if you turned up at a multi-billion euro merger and said, we're not going to see any cost savings for the next 5 years, you'd be fired on the spot.
All to come after the news from Una O'Hagan.
Good evening. The government has said it would have to consider the implications of today's judgment by the European Court of Human Rights, which found in favour of Cork woman Louise O'Keefe. The court ruled that the state was liable for the sexual abuse Ms. O'Keefe suffered while a pupil at a state primary school in 1973. The state is now obliged to accept that it is liable in this and other similar cases. Speaking to RTE News in the last hour, Ms. O'Keefe's solicitor, Ernest Cantillon, called on the state to re-engage with the more than 80 people who've dropped their legal actions against the state over alleged abuse in day schools. The Doyle Public Accounts Committee has agreed to invite a serving Garda who claims there have been abuses of the penalty points system to appear before them in a private meeting on Thursday. It's understood members heard legal advice that the whistleblower cannot name names and will be restricted in what he can say and what he can be asked. The liquidators of Mount Carmel Hospital have told unions that the last baby will be delivered at the hospital this Friday. Speaking after a meeting with the liquidators, SIPTU official Kevin Figgis said they had been told that there would be an obstetric consultant on call until February 7th, while antenatal care would be available until then also. The Supreme Court has been told that a teenage traveller whose mother challenged a secondary school's admission policy could be awarded compensation over a refusal to give him a place. Mary Stokes, mother of 16-year-old John Stokes, challenged the admissions policy of the Christian Brothers High School in Clonmel. The policy gave priority to sons of past pupils. The High Court found that Mr. Stokes had not been discriminated against. Mrs. Stokes, a mother of seven, wants the Supreme Court to overturn the High Court decision.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Liberty Insurance. Hit the road happy with Great Value Motor Insurance.
Scattered showers will mostly affect coastal areas overnight, with many inland areas dry with clear spells and some frost developing in parts of the Midlands and West. Cloudier in eastern coastal counties with showery rain returning overnight. Lowest temperatures 1 to 4 degrees. That's all for the moment. There'll be news again at 11.
Una, thank you very much indeed. You're very welcome back to The Late Debate. With me in studio tonight, our independent TD and member of the Public Accounts Committee, Shane Ross. Fine Gael, TD for Limerick, Patrick O'Donovan. Barrister and law lecturer at UCD, Paul Anthony McDermott. Dr. Teresa Reedy, lecturer in government at UCC, is in Cork. And independent Senator Sean Barrett, who's also an economist based at Trinity College, is with me here in studio. Later we'll discuss the ongoing controversy surrounding Irish water. But first we're going to talk about the latest developments tonight involving the Public Accounts Committee and the Garda whistleblower issue. Just over 2 hours ago the PAC finished their meeting and they issued a public statement, said that they would be calling serving Garda Maurice McCabe to appear before their committee in private this Thursday afternoon. Shane Ross, is it the case that the PAC were not prepared to back down on this in light of what Alan Shatter did yesterday by referring the matter to the Garda Ombudsman? But what you can actually question Maurice McCabe about on Thursday is much weaker than you would have hoped for.
No, I don't think it's weaker. The case is that we made a decision this evening that we were really confirming a formal decision to call in Maurice McCabe anyway, or to invite him in. And that we got a letter from him today, and it stated that he wished to be called, and he wished to be called in private on Thursday morning. We had a long discussion, and it was mostly to do with legal advice. It was mostly the legal advisor to the Eruxus, Melissa English, telling us what we could do and what we couldn't do. And most of it, she said that we were not precluded in any way from asking him in. We were told that she told us that we would have to obviously be very careful what we asked him, and he would not be allowed, and he'd be warned, as everybody else is, and not in any different way from anybody else, that he wasn't allowed to make allegations against anybody, which obviously would be damaging and would be a breach of privilege. And beyond that, there was an enormous amount of discussion about what could be done, what couldn't be done.
Are you more restricted, though, in what you personally and perhaps other members like Mary Lou MacDonald and John McGuinness would have liked to have been able to question Maurice McCabe on?
Well, I don't think so, because really it's a wider brief than some people have got the impression of. And I'll tell you why. The general impression is that we're restricted basically to kind of euros and cents, that we'd have to restrict to asking purely and simply about the money that is lost. But there are other areas within our terms of references, like efficiencies, systems, and other areas which we'd have to go into if we're going to find the cause of this. And there are areas beyond the penalty points which are relevant, and we could ask the whistleblowers about, particularly issues like, the number of summonses that have been served. Why only half the number of summonses have been served that should have been served? So we can go into any area which is the territory of the Controller and Auditor General, which is wider than just quite simply saying, look, there's that much tax lost. I'm not disappointed. What I am very pleased about is the fact that, completely contrary to our expectations, and I'm talking about, I suppose, Mary Lou MacDonald and John McGuinness and my own, that we are going to, first of all, that the whistleblower has been invited in, and that we have a fairly adequate line of questioning. I would prefer it to have been in public, as they would have done, but as he himself asked for it to be in private, and I presume that's his legal advice, I don't think we could, you know, contradict that. But we will ask him questions, I suppose, in as robust a manner as we asked the commissioner.
But I suppose people had the impression, whether it was a false impression or not, that your committee were going to pursue the Gardaí who cancelled penalty points, and you were going to have them all before you. You were going to question them. You were going to get to the bottom of how many penalty points had been cancelled, who did it and why.
Look, if we get statistics which indicate that there's a huge amount of... The statistics will be obviously very relevant because they will determine the amount of money that's been lost and that's been lost because there's a systemic failure. So we will go into details of statistics, but not actual individuals. And there's no question of going into individuals and no question of having some sort of a witch hunt on individuals. And that's not the point of the exercise. But if there is a real problem within the system, which is... for whatever reason, and maybe we will have to go into the reasons in order to make recommendations at the end. If there is a problem within the system, yeah, we will address it, and we'll address it very, very aggressively as well.
Was there much disagreement at the meeting? Because over the last number of days, there's been a lot of criticism of you and of Mary Lou MacDonald, John McGuinness, from within the committee, from the likes of Owen Murphy and John Deasy.
Yeah, sure. There has been... The disagreement today wasn't personal, certainly. There was no kind of personal attacks on anybody by anybody else. And some of the things that surfaced in the press didn't surface at the meeting today. There was obviously a disagreement about whether he should come in or not. And we certainly didn't expect it to get through. We did expect that, in view of the minister's statement last night and moving it to GSOC, that it would be taken away. And there was difference of emphasis. And people were asking the legal advisor for reasons why those of us who wanted the legal advisor to come in, wanted the whistleblower to come in, were asking the legal advisor for reasons why we should be able to have him in, and that we were given a clear bill of health. And those who didn't were asking for exactly the opposite. And that was the form the disagreement took. What was astonishing was, I suppose, and it was brought in the news, was that there was... A proposal put down because things were getting fairly, there was difference of opinion coming, and that seemed to crystallise minds. And once the proposal was put down, which was in my name and Mary Lou MacDonald's, it seemed to crystallise names. We had a 5-minute adjournment, according to the news tonight, which is not inaccurate. And after that, everybody was agreed that they should come in on Thursday.
Paul Anthony McDermott, what is your verdict on what has been agreed that the PAC can discuss on Thursday?
Well, the committee has clearly been walking a legal tightrope. Clearly, Senator Ross and his colleagues are Olympic standard gymnasts. They've just about kept on the rope once more with the assistance of the very good legal advice. I mean, I think the first concern will be they'll have to be on their best behaviour, because clearly the courts and the public in the referendum have expressed reservations about the ability of politicians of any political party to act in a quasi-judicial manner. Because politicians are about policy, the direction of the company, where the money is spent. When you start getting involved in things such as corruption, fraud, wrongdoing, you start to move into the area normally reserved by the courts. And what the courts have said is, look, you don't find judges and members of a jury giving radio interviews, doing press briefings, giving the heads up to journalists. You can't, in effect, behave as a politician if you want to get involved in those areas. And that is the tension. And I think in the famous Abby Lara judgment, Judge Denham, she's now the Chief Justice, quoted Robert Frost. She explained that whilst in England, the English Parliament did these things and the US Congress does them, in Ireland in 1937, we took the road less travelled by, and that has made all the difference. And she said, because our constitution protects the good name of the citizen, the normal way you hold people account is the Garda Commissioner explains himself to the minister, the minister explains himself to the Dáil, and that is how you have oversight. You don't have a situation where Parliament can haul in individual Gardaí and say, what are you doing? Are you breaking the law? Are you behaving properly or not?
Do you think there was a danger of the Public Accounts Committee perhaps stepping over that line?
I think there was, and I think that nobody wanted to see the Gardaí against the Public Accounts Committee in the forecourts. That would have been a disaster for all kinds of reasons. I think everybody's breathing a sigh of relief that for the moment anyway, that seems to have been diffused. It seems to have been diffused in part by agreeing to hold the session in private. And it's very important the committee maintains the concept of private, because as you know, sometimes in Ireland you can find out what's been discussed at a cabinet meeting and who said what within minutes after it's ended, or sometimes just before it begins you can find out what everyone's going to say. So it's terribly important the committee show the courts and show the public it can be trusted in that if it holds a private session, it is private. We don't have a situation where within 5 minutes someone's on RTE and you're able to give a 100% accurate account as to what's happened in that session.
Shane Ross, do you accept that the Garda Ombudsman Commission is the right office to investigate this?
I think there's nothing wrong with having parallel inquiries into this. I think it should have been referred to the Garda Ombudsman Commission at least a year ago, or maybe even before that. And I think if that had been done, it would have saved a lot of controversy and a lot of difficulty. The fact that it was done so late and it was done at the 11th hour and it was done just before the whistleblowers were due to come in, of course, makes it, and when we are way down the road in our inquiry, makes it less helpful. And it is now going to be a situation, I don't think it's impossible at all, where we're going to have two parallel inquiries. We're going to be asking different sorts of questions. And what the minister said last night, and that's absolutely fine as far as I'm concerned, is that he's going to examine the totality of what happened here. And we will be examining a more restricted area, admittedly much more restricted area, which may go a little wider than people expect, mm-hmm. but it's certainly not going to go anything like as wide as the Garda Ombudsman.
Patrick O'Donovan of Fine Gael, you're welcome to the programme. Isn't Shane Ross right that Alan Shatter should have referred this to the Garda Ombudsman almost 2 years ago when his office was made aware of the allegations in the first place? It would have saved an awful lot of time and it would have prevented whatever undermining of confidence there has been in the Gardaí over the last year and a half.
Well, I think this is probably the sixth version of an inquiry into this issue, fifth or sixth. And the minister said last night that the reason that he was referring it to the Garda Ombudsman now was on the basis of the information and the manner in which it has been treated in the public arena in the recent past. And up to that, it hadn't been, you know, kicked around in the fashion that it had been kicked around and up to then. So the minister invoked a provision in the Garda Act.
But can you honestly say, Patrick, that had the possibility of Maurice McCabe and John Wilson appearing before the Public Accounts Committee on Thursday not been there, that Alan Shatter would have done this yesterday?
I think that, like, you need to look at this in its totality. I mean, one of the reports is only due in the next week or so from the inspectorate. And, you know, that will obviously have to be looked at by the minister as well. But I think what Paul is after saying there a while ago is quite right. The big loser in this is the whole concept of committees of inquiry and committees of investigation. Because here we had a situation where a committee had turned itself onto a runway and before it even got its engine started, managed to flop itself down, purely because, as Paul quite rightly says, the concept of meetings being held in private seems to have eluded a lot of people, because, as you quite rightly pointed out, RTE were able to report today the proceedings of a private meeting. We've seen in the media recently more correspondence in relation to private meetings. And what it calls into question for me is, I'm on the same committee as Sean, and it has implications for other committees that are trying to carry out inquiries as well in relation to, you know, bringing people in and holding people to account and the manner in which you can hold them to account. I think this thing has been, from a public accounts committee point of view, a fiasco. And I think that, you know, the manner in which that it has been pulled and dragged through the media is certainly not what the public accounts committee should be about.
But why has it been a fiasco? I mean, I'll get Shane Ross to respond directly, but isn't the public accounts committee, they're trying to hold an arm of the state to account?
The manner in which they're trying to hold the arm of the state to account, I think, is the wrong way to do it. The Garda Commissioner is the accounting officer for the voted budget for the Gardaí, fair enough. But in relation to the issues that are being discussed at the moment, I think the Minister for Justice has a role in relation to being reportable to the Houses of the Oireachtas, and it's the Justice Committee, I feel. And I think that in relation to the future of this, there are the other standing committees of the Oireachtas, be it transport, education, health, whatever. And I just feel that there's another broadcaster said, kind of put it succinctly, I think, for me the other day. It's almost like the loose dog at the gate that, you know, will chase after every car that passes the road, and he'll catch up with none of them, but he'll bark and he'll roar and he'll chase every one of them, but he'll never catch any of them. And I think there's a temptation here. If you contrast the manner in which this thing has been addressed in public with, for argument's sake, the manner in which Jim Mitchell, God be good to him, chaired the Dirt Inquiry. There was no midterm or mid-afternoon discussions on the radio in relation to witness A or witness B on coming in before the Public Accounts Committee. The Public Accounts Committee carried out their work in public. People drew their own conclusions from watching it on the television or listening to it on the radio. None of the members engaged in a circus-like carry-on. And the committee drew up its report. And I think the unfortunate thing is what's after happening here tonight is that it seems from reports, and you'd have to believe them because everybody else has been accurate, all the other reports, is it's almost tribalistic now. We just heard Shane saying Mary Lou and I proposed.
Patrick, this has only come out. I mean, there's only been this criticism of the PAC in relation to the Gardaí. There wasn't a word of criticism in relation to the PAC's handling of the CRC hearings and the Irish Water hearings. They were lauded with
praise. But they're different. And the reason that they're different is I don't believe that, having the Garda Commissioner in the position of where you have a Garda Síochána Ombudsman and he's in situ and he can examine and investigate these issues now that have been brought before him by the Minister for Justice. I think that's the appropriate way. I don't believe show trials where people are named and they don't have a right to defend themselves and, you know, stuff is left hanging out there in the public arena and it might take 6 months before they can go back in. I mean, you don't see people coming out in the forecourts mid-trial or anything like that, giving a media interview. And I just think that one of the things that has come before the Dáil even today is a change in relation to standing orders for people, their suitability, for instance, in the banking inquiry.
All right. Well, we might come back to that later. But Shane, I want you to respond to that. This whole thing was a fiasco.
Well, it's been dramatic, certainly. It's been very tense and very difficult. You know, the Public Accounts Committee has certainly attracted a huge amount of media attention. He's absolutely right about that in recent weeks. And I don't think it's you can separate all the particular issues. You had a situation there where the Central Remedial Clinic was the subject of huge amount of media attention and public accounts attention, and where a job was done, whether well or badly. It was certainly, I think, probably unprecedented that the Public Accounts Committee should have, first of all, discovered stuff, secondly, acted upon it, and thirdly, have got a very, very dynamic and very quick result. And that was the removal or the resignation of the board as a direct result of some investigations which was made by the Public Accounts Committee, which were to do with finance, corporate governance and other issues. There are other issues which are attracting a huge amount of media attention, which the Public Accounts Committee is investigating notably the whole top-up saga, which is going to go on and on. And I think Patrick's criticism, one criticism he did make, that we seem to be chasing too many things at the same time is fair enough. It's only because there are so many things to chase at the same time, that there are so many top-up organisations, that we are finding the volume of work almost impossible. And on the issue of the Garda, who they're accountable for, the commissioner comes in regularly. He was in earlier this year, and he's in again this year. It is of particular interest to the media that there are whistleblowers in prospect. And I must say, I think it's very, very important that the media and the people see this, and that they see the Public Accounts Committee at work questioning this. We are not holding, and it is emotionally and wrong, we are not holding show trials of anybody. We are doing our job, I hope, and I hope effectively, in that when we get someone like the Garda Commissioner, he must be challenged. He isn't challenged anywhere else. We challenged his language, we challenged what he did, and we challenged what he does. That is our job. And I can assure you that when the whistleblower comes in on Thursday morning, and if there are any other whistleblowers, we will challenge them equally robustly. That is our job as well, and challenge their evidence and their credibility. Now, if it attracts a lot of media attention, that is, I think, a good thing, not a bad thing. I think it's tremendous that people who are being accountable should be seen by the people out there and should be accountable for it. And I think there is a sensitivity in government, and I understand it, and I understand the minister's sensitivity as well. When you call in somebody like the Garda Commissioner, because there's the whole issue of the security of the state comes into being as well, and the Garda Commissioner obviously feels somewhat threatened by this questioning, but it's something that we must do. And I think even if the government resists it, and they are resisting it, I think we must continue to do it.
Teresa Reedy. Teresa, you're very welcome to the programme. You're joining us tonight from Cork. What's your view on all of this and what Alan Shatter did yesterday? Does it amount to a power grab, or did he have no option but to do this to stop whatever potential showdown there might have been on Thursday?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that the Public Accounts Committee is, you know, a committee of Parliament, and it's independent of the government. But this particular committee, I suppose, should be understood as having a very interdependent role with that of the Controller and Auditor General. So, I mean, it's there to look at reports from the CNAG to check that, you know, public money is spent in the way that the Oireachtas actually intended, and that is that it's spent on policies and with outcomes that were planned. And it tied into that, you know, it has important functions regarding efficiency and what's kind of written down in the legislation is management effectiveness. So it has a very clear role in the scrutiny of the way in which public money is raised and spent. So I think from that point of view, I suppose in one sense the remit is narrow, but if we think about, you know, public money permeates all the public policy areas of the state, so it can filter into a wide variety of different areas.
But was it potentially overstepping its boundaries?
Well, certainly there's always the potential to overstep, and I think the clear delineation is there that there is no role for the Public Accounts Committee with regard to the scrutiny of policy or individual state agencies' role and work. Their specific task is with regard to the raising and spending of public money. And so while their investigations, if you want, are constrained within that and stay within that remit, there's nothing stopping them pursuing those particular tasks. I mean, they have to be conscious, of course, of other decisions which form or provide a backdrop against which their work is done. That's, they have to be aware of privilege, of course, and they are constrained as well by the findings of the Abbey Lara decision. But there's nothing per se stopping them investigating this particular set of penalty points disclosures. And I suppose it's also worth noting that similar type things have come onto the agenda of the Public Accounts Committee in the past. There were investigations in the late 90s and again in the mid 2000s looking at the collection of fines by the Gardaí and the court services, and there were very kind of critical reports written by the Public Accounts Committee at those times about how there wasn't a kind of systematic and clear management policy for collecting of public monies. There's a kind of a much stronger suggestion that there could be kind of perhaps wrongdoing at play here in this argument, but it's the similar idea that there are revenues being lost to the state, and while that remains the core focus of the committee, I think they're well within their rights to pursue their obligations. And the other thing to say is, I mean, I suppose to some extent as well, committees are always pushing the boundaries to extend their role, and committees in general in the Irish Parliament are particularly weak, albeit that the Public Accounts Committee is probably the strongest of those that are there. So they are particularly constrained in comparison to how committees conduct their business in other parliaments. So to some extent, we shouldn't be surprised that committees are kind of pushing the boundaries and seeking to enhance their powers and to be more effective in holding state agencies and the government to account. In fact, there was a lot of discussion in advance of the election about further empowerment of committees. So it's interesting to watch the kind of dynamics that are at play here between kind of the committees as a core, if you want, operating component of Parliament, the role of the government, and then state agencies, of course, which are, if you want, trying to avoid further scrutiny.
And we'll discuss whether they should have more powers in a moment. But Sean Barrett, I just want to bring you in on this. Is this the way it should be, these two parallel investigations, the central one perhaps conducted by the Ombudsman and then the PAC looking at systems, processes and procedures?
Yes, and I think it's important that, as Teresa was saying there, that under Article 33 of the Constitution, the controller is the officer in charge of taking account of all monies administered by or under the authority of the Oireachtas. So that's his job. And we are in a country which bankrupted itself about 6 years ago. So, and I think the symptoms of that are a very powerful executive, which has to be called to account by Parliament, a weak Parliament, and a very powerful permanent government. And we have to learn the lessons of how 64 billion walked out the door of government buildings. The unreformed, this system could bankrupt the country again. Checks, balances, that were the key things in the Senate referendum. And I wasn't a bit surprised that the retention of the Senate won out in that. We need more of this, not less, because left to itself, this system put the country on the rocks and tens of thousands of people had to emigrate and we had to go to the IMF. So the reform of Irish government is a forgotten theme now that the government's out of the bailout situation, it should really address reform issues. And Minister Howlin is one of the great advocates of whistleblowers. Let's see lots of it, because we did bankrupt ourselves. That left to itself, this system will spend lots of money. The relative amount of money in the penalty points, I think, is 8 million. But we can't say, it doesn't matter, 8 million went missing. Maybe it was in a good cause. The commissioner mentioned people whose cattle were being chased by bees or something, so you could speed to home and so on to rescue the situation. But I'm sure all of those are fine. The standing of the Garda is extremely high. We might emulate the Northern Ireland system, where a police force which was distrusted in large sections of society now has lots of oversight, with a policing board, an ombudsman, an oversight committee and a professional standards department. That the Guards have a splendid image, witness the Adrian Donoghue case, and they shouldn't fear this. Let's have a sensible debate about the 8 million.
Mm-hmm. Paul Anthony McDermott, in relation to whether or not committees should have more powers, and obviously the people voted on that in 2011 and rejected giving them more powers. We have a text in from Ed saying, although the PAC does good work, they have a tendency to goose step around the place, which is why I voted to deny them the extra powers they were looking for. Would you support giving them more powers?
No, I think we have the balance about right, and I think the public were right to be slightly suspicious about giving them more powers. The point about being a politician is, and most of the people who follow that profession are very good at being politicians, but obviously in order to survive you have to get re-elected, and I think the concern is that makes it very hard to come up with an unpopular verdict. It's very hard to imagine the PAC committee will look at any of these issues and conclude everything is fine, because that makes a very boring headline on page 25 of the newspaper, whereas if you can come out and say it's a scandal, it's shocking, you're going to be on page one. Whereas if you're a judge, you don't need that kind of publicity. So often the public will read about what looks like an interesting court case, and at the end of it, the judge will say, actually, there's nothing to this. There's no evidence I'm throwing the allegations at. And because a judge doesn't have to throw themselves at the electorate the following week, the judge doesn't mind being unpopular. So, for example, can you imagine any politician acquitting somebody charged of murder? Can you imagine any politician acquitting somebody who's alleged to be a corrupt business person in a fraud trial? No politician would ever do that because the public would think, gosh, if the politician is letting the person off, does that mean the politician is soft on that? So I think there is a demarcation between law and politics. And when you get into allegations of individual corruption, saying somebody broke the law and that wasn't prosecuted properly, you are getting close to the kind of job courts do. Now, the dividing line isn't a clear one, and that's why the legal advice the committee is getting is so important, to make sure that it does as much as it possibly can to find out what's going on, but in doing that doesn't overstep that mark and in effect start acting as only a judge can act.
Teresa, go ahead. I could just add in there just a point on the Oireachtas Inquiries referendum. I was involved in the research that was conducted after that. And in fact, the current debate highlights much of what was found in that research. There was actually a very high level of support among citizens for Parliament and parliamentary committees conducting inquiries. But there were some significant concerns about how the individual rights would be balanced within the framework of those inquiries. And that was one of the major reasons that came through for why people actually voted against the Oireachtas Inquiries referendum. So the kind of the debate and the context of the current discussions on the PAC are pretty much captured in that
Teresa,
particular
do you
research.
Think that would still be the case? I'm just wondering, in light of what the PAC and other committees, but particularly the PAC, has been engaged in over the last number of months in terms of the CRC, etc. Do you think if the referendum was held now, that would the result be much different?
I suppose you're just kind of casting into the future. I think one of the kind of pieces of information that you'd have to have in there is that people are becoming more and more distrustful of politicians of all colours and creeds. And in fact, the European Social Survey over the last number of years has shown us that that position has actually been amplified or has been exaggerated by the crisis. So I think it's quite possible that there would be more distrust of both Parliament and of politicians at this point. That's kind of bringing it in from other research. But certainly, you know, there were concerns about individual rights expressed by the voters that we interviewed during that particular research.
Shane Ross, what do you think about the powers that committees like your own have at the moment? Are they enough or would you like more?
Well, I think we're working reasonably effectively with our own powers at the moment in recent times. And it has been, you know, we have got powers to compel, but we haven't had to use them. And the threat of using them has you know, it's persuaded people to come in. So I think at the moment, what I think we have to do, and it's not just holding people to account, it's to expose, it's to discover, and to reveal, and to let people see exactly. We have no powers of sanction, and I've never had anybody suggest that we should have any powers of sanction. We're not, as Paul Anthony says, we're not judges. We're not interested in criminal activity of any sort like that. We're there to show the public what's going on.
Is that enough, in your view?
If we've got enough powers to do that, it is. But we may need compulsory powers from time to time to call people in if they're refusing to come in, and we can't show that. I think at the moment, probably our powers, as they have been exercised in the last 3 or 4 months, are adequate, because we do have powers to compel if people refuse to come in, and that is enough. But it's really up to the public to judge whether we're providing the public with the answers that they need, whether we're asking the right questions, and whether they're actually seeing what's going on. What we are trying to do is open up to people and say, look, this is really what's going on. It's actually led us down into areas which we never expected to go, but I think that's probably a good thing.
Patrick O'Donovan.
The real issue here, though, isn't in relation to shining a light, and I don't think anybody would discount the fact that, you know, shining a light on dark corners that the public want to see into, that's a good thing. But the issue that has come up here recently is, as far as I can deduce it, is not letting something go to its natural conclusion, not allowing an investigation to finish before you preempt the outcome of it and before you start judging before people have had a right to reply. And that's the biggest problem that I have with this. And that's why I use the word show trial. Because, you know, Paul Anthony is quite right. I mean, the evening that the Garda Commissioner was on the Public Accounts Committee, I mean, it was wall-to-wall coverage, and they were beating down the door to get on with a microphone to give their opinion in relation to what it was that he had said and to analyse his evidence. The men had absolutely no right of reply in that kind of a forum. And I don't dispute that the Public Accounts Committee does very good work and always has. But I think the manner in which it's conducting its work at the moment needs to be looked at. Particularly, I don't think it's appropriate that people give interviews and media comment in the middle of an investigation. I just think that's absolutely bonkers. And I think that the Oireachtas is going to have to look at this either by way of standing order or by way of some sort of a protocol to ensure that when an investigation, be it Dublin Bus or be it Pylons or Airgrid or whatever, that members actually finish their investigation before they go off half-cocked with half a story and create a media frenzy. And that's what has brought this to the head where it is today. And that's why the minister acted, I believe, in the manner in which he did to give this to the Garda Ombudsman.
Sean Barrett.
Well, you see, there is a great tradition in Irish politics, and it's a wonderful tradition of parliamentary discussion, debate. I'm just making the names. Edmund Burke, Henry Grattan, Daniel O'Connell, Charles Stewart Parnell, Isaac Butt, John Redmond. They were never ministers. They were brilliant parliamentarians, and people read parliamentary reports wall to wall at that time. That's what they're there for. Ideas, for good or ill, as J.M. Keynes said, are much more powerful than the powers of vested interest. We in the Parliament, Shane, myself and Patrick, we have really no power except the power of oratory and debate. The minister has a huge budget. He's got a whole set of civil servants behind him. And they have to be called to account. And some of what Theresa was saying, there is support for a more active parliament. And the fact
but
that
in this case, is it a case of Alan Shatter holding the PAC to account rather than the other way around?
I'm not sure. There's some annoyance that Shane gives interviews, for example, and he writes in the Sunday Independent. I don't feel that annoyance. That we have to discuss things and debate them. The public send us there. And behind all of this, that I found as a relatively new member of the Oireachtas, people are extremely friendly. Paul was saying, why did Shane say Mary Lou and I decide something? It's because people of different parties form friendships. And in fact, it's a pity sometimes that the party whip system stops that developing. But we have to cross boundaries and get a parliament that commands respect, because voting turnout is getting smaller and smaller at every election. And we're there to see that the immense amount of taxation and the immense amount of borrowing, which is unsustainable, is that the money is properly spent. And everybody who's on the payroll has to answer on that, because left to itself, the payroll will destroy the country and more people have to emigrate and unemployment keeps rising. So Parliament is hugely important, and I don't feel I serve on several of the committees with Patrick and so on, and people cross boundaries. The tension isn't there. I wonder if the commissioner was the person who brought the tension in. He wasn't used to being questioned, but heads of universities, state companies. I wish I'd put down an amendment to make Irish Water subject to the Controller General, because then the PAC could investigate. I can tell you, for any new body that's set up, there will be an amendment from me that it will be under the scrutiny of the Controller General.
In a minute or two, I'm just going to read some texts in from Ray. Your current speaker, Senator Ross, Deputy Ross, has no difficulty in saying that a witness must not make an allegation. However, he has no difficulty in making those allegations himself in interviews. Martin says, congratulations to Shane Ross and the PAC to take such a brave and proper decision tonight. It was their finest hour. Ed in Dublin 7 says the Fine Gael TD criticising the PAC is criticising the only thing in the Dáil that works. Accountability and transparency is as alien to this government as the last one. Desmond Martin says, would the minister have offered the proposal of the Ombudsman if the PAC had not got this actual problem into mainstream news? Well done to the PAC. It's right and proper to hear the truth for a change. And another one for the moment. Shane Ross and the PAC find that the more they shake the tree, the more that falls out of it. That's because they are so effective at what they do. A great but difficult job. Do you sense, Paul Anthony, that there is a public appetite for the type of work that the PAC have been doing and that the public do want more of it?
I think there clearly is, because the politicians they're 10A of A tuned into what the public want, and presumably they feel that there's a big appetite for more of it. There is a slight element or risk that people do think, who are they going to go after next? That at the moment, it's almost every section of society has been bashed for being overpaid, lazy, has too many consultants. And there will come an end point when there's nobody else to look at except the politicians themselves and say, well, you're doing pretty well in terms of allowances and staff levels.
And the politicians who do an awful lot of favours for their own constituents as well, yeah, maybe bump them up to the top of the queue for whatever.
Exactly. So I think it's a card the politicians just need to be careful. Mm. It's a golden card up to a point, and it gets them publicity, and rightly so, and they do good work. But they just need to be careful they don't overplay it and people feel, well, this is actually becoming a little bit of a game now, and it's not really about holding people to account.
On that, Paul, before Christmas, and Shane could confirm, on the insolvency legislation, there was no minister more willing to take amendments, including lots of them from Sinn Féin, than Alan Shatter. And I thanked him at the end. I said it was a wonderful tutorial on insolvency because we just sat down, hysterics. And in fact, just last week, Mr. Varadkar took four amendments on his road safety legislation in the Dáil, and he's told the Senate, please come up with more. Mm. My door is open. So that's a good way of doing business. Parliament has been weak in Ireland, and maybe what you've been talking about is a reaction against the whip system, and people just being told to stay quiet. The recommendation last week that anybody who'd said anything against banks should not be allowed to sit on the banking committee was quite amazing. I proposed Senator Robinson Crusoe and Deputy Man Friday should be brought along. If everybody has a view on what happened in banks, and that should not preclude them.
And if they they shouldn't be in the office.
Minister Rabbit said so last Sunday.
Just taking up one of the things Sean said, and I agree with him. Yeah. There's a big difference, though, between being quiet and between drawing conclusions before the end game. Mm. And that's the... your texter from Dublin 7 didn't obviously hear what I said. I applaud the Public Accounts Committee on most of the work that it does. But I just think here, their wheels have come off of the wagon. Mm-hmm. And they've done themselves and Oireachtas committees a huge disservice by arriving at conclusions in the media in advance of the end game without giving people due process. And that's why the Ombudsman Commission is involved in this now. That's the only
reason. We're
going
to talk about Irish Water in a minute. But just finally to you, Teresa, we mentioned the banking inquiry, and obviously a lot of attention will be on it in the months to come. It's expected perhaps to get underway later this year. Will it be a fairly toothless one, do you think?
I think it'll be quite a dramatic one and highly politicised, and will play out very extensively in the media as we kind of relive the melodrama of 2008 and up to 2011. And I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, as regards the actual inquiry itself, it is, of course, constrained by the fact that it cannot, because of the Abby Lara judgment, it cannot make findings of fact. So to some extent, the outcomes, if you want, are the final conclusions will be constrained by that. It will be interesting, though, for us to get the specific detail of what occurred. There have been a number of reports already concluded at this point into it, and I think they'll be quite useful in terms of preparing the committee members for the type of questions that they will need to ask. So I think it'll be quite dramatic. It'll be very interesting to get the detail. It'll be particularly interesting to see the dynamics, the political dynamics that were at play in the course of it. But I think we do have to be conscious that it's not likely that there will be very substantive conclusions or any kind of findings of fact at the end of it because of those constraints.
We're going to move on now to discuss the ongoing controversy surrounding Irish Water and the latest revelations by two ESRI economists that the cost will be €2 billion more than necessary because of a deal done with local authority staff to transfer their workers to the new semi-state body. As we talked about on this programme 2 weeks ago, it will take a full 12 years to get Irish Water fully operational, and the 3,400 local authority staff will transfer with their pay and conditions intact. Well, today in the Dáil, independent TD Stephen Donnelly was scathing in his criticism of the arrangement.
You're setting up a new monster. Another one that's going to waste billions of euro of taxpayers' money. And to bankroll all of this waste, Irish Water is going to have to overcharge the Irish people for water which they already pay for. We've just learned that Irish Water is signing 12-year service level agreements with the local authorities. They're locking in the cost of the entire existing workforce. Now, this means that the money people are going to have to pay for their water is going to end up paying salaries for jobs that don't exist. And Taoiseach, it means that there's going to be no room for Irish companies to bid and compete for the work. Now, Taoiseach, your ministers keep telling us that Irish Water exists in the commercial sector. I come from the commercial sector and I've worked on mergers. And I can tell you that the only mythical country around here seems to be the one that your government is in right now. Taoiseach, if you turned up at a multi-billion euro merger and said, we're not going to see any cost savings for the next 5 years, and we're locking in the workforce for the next 12, you'd be fired on the spot.
And the Fianna Fáil leader, Micheál Martin, had this to say about it.
And all of this will result in higher charges for the public. But of course, the public will not be told what they have to pay in water charges, because that's going to be a very closely guarded secret as well, until well beyond the local elections and into next year. And the regulator will be put in there and superimposed as a basis for not giving the people any sense of how much water will cost them because of all the excessive nature of the establishment of Irish Water and the excessive costs involved. And last week, Taoiseach, I asked you if you knew and if you thought it was okay for retired county managers and retired senior public servants to move seamlessly into Irish Water, even though they may have enjoyed very generous severance and pension packages. You said you didn't know. But you must have known, Taoiseach. And it's inconceivable that you didn't know, and that you didn't speak to Minister Hogan about this.
Thank you.
Because we do know now that one such county manager received about £336,000 in a generous package before moving into Irish Water. But lo and behold, that same individual headed up the Transition Office.
Thank you.
And the Transition Office decided on how many people got jobs at senior management level. And that person themselves, of course, got a senior job in Irish Water.
And this was the Taoiseach's response.
As I understand it, there were three persons who retired from county councils who received lump sums and pensions and who were recruited under open competition for Irish Water. Deputy Martin's aware of the position so far as the public service is concerned and the capacity of people who get further jobs in the public service and the limitations on what they can earn. Now, Irish Water is not part of the public service as such, in that it's to be a commercial semi-state body. Obviously, there are views that the Minister for the Environment has an authority under Section 27 of the Act, and he will look at that. So far from your sort of assertion that this is some sort of secret organisation that has nothing to do with the public, I might remind you that your own party now actually favours a continuation of the existing status quo. 34 local authorities, all of the staff contained therein.
Enda Kenny in the Dáil today. I should say that Shane Ross has left us at this point, and thanks to him for taking part in our discussion about the PAC and the Gardaí. Patrick Donovan, Brendan in Dublin has texted us about this. He says, overmanning at Irish Water is another cosy arrangement between the government and the unions for which the public will pay dearly. Is it difficult to argue with that?
Well, first of all, just in relation to what I'll come back to that, but what Stephen Donnelly was speaking about today was actually, he was giving a great dissertation on why Irish Water should be privatised. And if you could see the faces of his technical group pals around him as he was speaking, the shock on their faces certainly wasn't, I say, something that had been discussed at a technical group, because he was basically advocating that upwards of 2,000 people that are currently working in water services in local authorities around the country should be fired. When the Taoiseach stood up and said that in his reply, Deputy Donnelly definitely wobbled quite a lot, because I don't think he actually understands, maybe because of the fact that he hasn't been involved with local authorities, how water services at the moment are constituted.
Yeah, but transferring 3,400 staff to Irish Water and taking 12 years to get it up and running, with their pay and conditions intact, costing an extra €2 billion more than necessary.
Well, we've 34 local authorities at the moment providing water at different cost bases, working off of different systems that are going to have to be harmonised. What the Taoiseach said today was, if you look at the figures, for instance, for Scotland, you have upwards of 3,000 people as well there for a country of the similar population. What the Taoiseach did say today was that by natural progression of the scheme into the future, and as the scheme beds down, there will be opportunities for people to retire. But at the moment, we have the 34 different local authorities with their water services departments and their wastewater treatment plants.
But it's the taxpayer that's paying for this.
But the taxpayer's paying for it already. And the taxpayer's paying for it already through direct taxation, through commercial rates, through commercial water charges, through farmers that are paying for water. So, you know, at the moment, the disparity that's there is huge. If you buy a kettle in an office block at the moment, you're paying water charges, but you can have a person up the street with 5 cars and they're washing it and they're not in business and they don't pay it at all. So the disparity that's there is massive. In my constituency, there are people in domestic dwelling houses who don't have the privilege of living on a mains water supply and are paying excessive water charges, they will believe, through group schemes. But it's either paid or not paid, because it can be turned off and they don't have the luxury when they're in the locations that they're living in. So the first thing I would say to people like Stephen Donnelly and Micheál Martin wants to maintain the status quo, 34 systems pumping 40% of our water into the ground, losing hundreds of millions of euros a year, had 14 years to fix it and did absolutely nothing about it. I worked in an industry, in a pharmaceutical industry, where we depended absolutely 100% on a safe and reliable source of water on a regular basis where the supply couldn't be interrupted. At the moment, local authorities all over the country, and I was a member of one for myself for 8 years, are facing huge problems in relation to infrastructure. And Irish Water is designed to make sure that what will be there in the future will be a utility that's capable of delivering a safe and reliable water supply.
Sean Barrett.
I have a problem with that, what Patrick was saying, that we still don't know. This is on for a couple of years now. We can't tell the listeners what's the price of water, what's the generous free allowance. The bill itself in the Senate was amended 54 times by the government itself, that 23 on the committee stage and 31 on the report stage. I have to say, I think they're making it up as they go along. The amendments that I had that the minister rejected, and Fergus O'Dowd is a very popular minister, I must say, he rejected any role for the National Consumer Agency. He rejected any role for local authority representatives. He rejected any role for the Competition Authority to regulate this monopoly. He rejected a motion of mine to give 100 litres as the free allowance, because we consume about 145 per head per day. He rejected the Department of Finance guidelines to apply in relation to capital investment appraisal. He rejected the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform guidelines. He put an energy regulator in charge of water. I can't figure out why, because the UK has a water regulator for that sector. He did accept that the freedom of information legislation should apply. But this is old style. I'd agree with Patrick on that. This is the way we used to do things when the country was going down the tubes.
You've described the whole thing as a shambles.
They should have done a proper cost-benefit analysis and put all the information before people, not have it leaking out in interviews here and so on. And the minister has admitted that he should have replied in the Dáil to parliamentary questions. He said that was a mistake. But I think, tying our conversation tonight together, this should immediately go under the Controller and Auditor General. There are too many loose ends and very expensive loose ends associated with this whole affair. As I said earlier, now that we've got the Troika are gone, we want better governance in this country, and we could start by starting again on this water legislation. Left to themselves, seems to be happening here. Just look at the figures from the UK. You can't leave water engineers to themselves. Ofwat in the UK tells us that the applications for the period 2010-15, the engineers wanted to spend 27 billion. They got allowed 19. They applied for 43% more. They wanted a 4.3% return on capital. The regulator allowed them 3.8.
Okay.
They are quite satisfied with only 40% of the UK on meters. We went for a target of 100%. I don't know why we did that. We may have put meters into people whose consumption will be under the free allowance. That's if the government can make up its mind.
Okay. Patrick O'Donnell, but what do you say to all of that?
Well, just in relation to the regulator, I think it's fair to say that the regulator is in existence at the moment. And I can imagine Sean's reaction if the Minister for the Environment had set up a new regulator. They'd be saying, well, you know, you're bringing it in under board gas, so why not use the energy regulator? So the energy regulator has been used for a very simple reason. Just in relation to parliamentary questions, the Minister has already said in the course of the Dáil debates that answers will be given in relation to parliamentary questions. Answers couldn't be given in relation to parliamentary questions up to now because it wasn't voted money that was going into Irish Water up to now. It was money that was drawn down on a loan from the Pension Reserve Fund, which is commercially sensitive. But he has also said that it'll be subject to the Freedom of Information Act, something actually Fianna Fáil were up in their high horses over. Yet in 2002, they tried to do away with the Freedom of Information Act altogether, and they've conveniently forgot about that. And, you know, the same people that are saying now, about the Irish Water and the movement of staff into Irish Water, these are the same people when the concept of Irish Water came up, first of all, they said, make sure that the staff from the local authorities move because they'll take the local knowledge with them. These are the very same people now that are saying that they shouldn't be moving at all. Like, I mean, the first question that people have to ask themselves is, do they believe that the current system is fit for purpose? And do they believe that water should be charged to the user? And I think at the end of the day, Bord Gáis have a proven track record of delivering a service to people in this country over many years. This is a huge utility that's mm-hmm. going to be delivered. And it has to be done in a manner in which I think that there has to be confidence in. And already everybody agrees that the fact that it's been put in under Bord Gáis, that there's savings there already because they have systems in place that otherwise would have to be paid for.
Well, first of all, on the energy regulator, Colin McCarthy has shown that energy prices in Ireland for electricity are 41% above the EU average. If the energy regulator had a brilliant record in delivering low price electricity, I might be willing to discuss your proposition and put him in charge of water as well. I certainly don't want to pay 41% more for water. There has been a culture of secrecy. I certainly don't think it's Minister O'Dowd. We don't see Minister Hogan that much. But I think the Department of the Environment is one of those secret departments. When this came to the House initially, was there any reference to the McLaughlin report, which showed that local government in Ireland is massively overmanned at managerial level? So preserving all of this and putting it into a new state company, which was supposed to save us money, doesn't really add up as far as I'm concerned. I wish there'd been proper documentation. For instance, I have the explanatory memorandum, which says on the front of it, it includes a financial memorandum. There was no financial memorandum produced in November before it went to the Senate. There still isn't any. I got copies of the explanatory memorandum. They didn't add the finances. They don't know the finances yet. Mm. The appearance of making this up as they're going along is what I get from it the whole time. And it's been a mistake. Let's try to correct it now and, you know, go up to Dublin Castle, put the controller back in charge of this. Too many people who were influential in causing the bank crisis have materialised as consultants. I think people are scandalised by that. When you employ somebody, you read the CV and see why should that person be on your payroll. We didn't seem to do it in relation to this particular
one. Okay, Teresa Reedy, what's your view on this? Is this very damaging for the government?
I mean, I think this is really just another tale of poor administrative and parliamentary processes in Ireland. And like Sean, I see considerable overlap actually in the two discussions that we've been having. I mean, last week we were discussing consultancy fees. This week we're talking about staffing arrangements in Irish Water. And I mean, I think the more important point is that all of this should have been made very clear in the initial phases when the legislation setting up and establishing Irish Water were going through Parliament. On one of the days when these pieces of legislation were being discussed, there was a full walkout of the opposition because of the way that the legislation was being rushed through. So, I mean, I think there's an undercurrent or a theme running through so many of these scandals and problems that we have, and that is that our parliamentary processes and the administrative process that establish all of these bodies and responsible for providing services really aren't up to the scratch. So I think I mean the technical detail of Irish Water is one thing, but I think the actual processes that get us here deserve such rethinking and really significant re-examination and reform. And I mean that just has to be reiterated over and over again.
Paul Anthony, I don't have time to come to you, unfortunately, because we're going to just finish the programme tonight with some breaking news involving a Fine Gael Minister of State. Fionnán Sheehan is Group Political Editor with the Irish Independent and he's on the line. Fionnán, we're talking about Brian Hayes, Minister of State for Finance. Is he going to run for Europe?
Yeah, he'll confirm it tomorrow morning. He's at a meeting tonight of the Dublin South West constituency where he's told the local party activists that he will be standing in the European election, putting his name forward to become the Fine Gael candidate at the convention in the middle of next month. He's basically saying that, you know, Fine Gael needs strong representation in Europe. He wants to follow in line of the likes of Mary Bonatti and Gay Mitchell. And that as a result of that, he'd obviously have to resign his seat. And if he's assuming he's elected, and then he will be standing down as a junior minister. My understanding is that members at that meeting have paid tribute to him and said it's great and they'll be out campaigning for him and so on and so forth, and that he's putting himself ahead of the party, or putting the party ahead of himself. And so on and so forth. But he'll confirm all this tomorrow morning. My understanding is he'll stay on as a junior minister until he's elected as MEP. Obviously, at that point, he would stand down. He'll be the only Fine Gael candidate one would expect. He'll top the poll. And the speculation will then begin on who will replace him in the
by-election. And just briefly, Fionnán, will he be a big loss to the party domestically?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think if you look at the junior ministerial ranks, he's certainly been the outstanding performer. He's probably had a higher profile and done a lot more heavy lifting in terms of selling the party than many of his colleagues at a higher level in cabinet. But, you know, perhaps this indicates that he didn't feel that he was going to get the promotion in the autumn when the reshuffle came about.
Fionnán, thank you very much indeed for taking our call tonight. Fionnán Sheehan there of the Irish Independent. My thanks to Patrick O'Donovan, to Paul Anthony McDermott, to Dr. Teresa Reedy and to Senator Sean Barrett as well. We're back with Late Debate 10 o'clock tomorrow night. Until then, from all of us, good night.
The Late Debate, presented by Audrey Carville, was produced by Donal O'Herlihy. The broadcast coordinator was Maeve Mooney. The researcher is Richie Byrne. And sound supervision tonight was by Pather Carney.